Good morning, everyone. I'm Mark McClellan. I'm the director of the Engelberg Center for Healthcare Reform at the Brookings Institution. I'd like to thank all of you for joining us for the first of a three-part set of Sentinel Initiative webinars. This is the Sentinel Initiative 101 for the basics of the Sentinel program, but especially it's an update opportunity. It's been more than 3 years since FDA launched the Sentinel Initiative. A lot has happened in that time, and a lot of issues are part of the Sentinel process going forward as the program continues to expand. And this set of three webinars is intended to bring everybody up to speed on where the Sentinel Initiative stands. So it's an opportunity to review what's happened over the past 3 years. It's an opportunity to think about where the program is going, and it's a good opportunity for everyone to get up to speed on these important evidence initiatives. Each of the three webinars in this series is going to cover a different aspect of the Sentinel Initiative. During today's webinar, Judy Rakusin, the Sentinel Initiative scientific lead at the FDA's Office of Medical Policy in the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, will provide a high-level review of the scope and achievements of FDA's Sentinel Initiative, and she's going to focus on how a range of different aspects and activities in the initiative fit together. This is going to be an online web presentation. All of your lines should be automatically muted at this point, but just to make sure we don't have any background noise and everyone can hear well, please confirm that your phone or your computer is muted. To mute the phone, simply press *6, and to unmute later on when there's the opportunity for comments and questions, press *7. So that's *6 to mute, *7 to unmute. And with respect to those comments and questions, we encourage you to use the Q&A tab at the top of your screen. You can use that to submit questions or comments at any time during the presentations. And we'll put them in a queue, and then we'll call upon you when we get to that part of this webinar to state your question or comment. And this is helpful for us in planning, getting the topics for discussion well organized. And, again, you can press that Q&A tab at any time. At the end of the session, we then will open up those who are participating by phone as well to ask questions. So opportunity to get a question or comment in through the Q&A tab, but if you're only on by phone, we'll come back to you at the end of the webinar as well. If you have any technical problems with getting access to the video, the slides for this webinar, or anything else, please call the Brookings IT Help Desk. That's at 202-797-6193, 202-797-6193. We're going to turn to our presentation now. Again, please remember you can submit questions anytime, and then we'll go to those after Judy's presentation. With that, I'm very pleased to introduce Judy Rakusin to provide this overview of the Sentinel Initiative. And Judy, if you could press *7 to make sure your line's unmuted, I'll turn this over to you.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Just fine, thanks.
Okay. Now let me see if I can forward the slides. Okay, now I've gone backwards. Let's see if I can get forward. There we go. Good morning, everyone, thank you, Mark, for inviting me to talk about FDA Sentinel Initiative this morning. As Mark mentioned, it's been over 3 years since we launched the Sentinel Initiative. It was FDA's response to the FDA Amendments Act of 2007, Section 905, describing the requirements for developing an active post-market risk identification and analysis system. And this Section 905 laid out specific goals for this post-market risk identification and analysis system that should include at least 25 million patients by July of last year and at least 100 million patients by July of next year. So there's a check mark there because we achieved that and exceeded that goal of last July of 2010, and we're well on our way to reaching our 100 million patients for the goal in July of next year. Another part of Section 905 describes the requirement that FDA access a variety of data sources, including both federal health-related electronic data and private sector health-related electronic data. And as you'll hear today, we have both of those types of data within the Sentinel Initiative. So when FDA launched the Sentinel Initiative in May of 2008, the goal was to improve FDA's capacity to identify and investigate safety issues in near real time. And in order to do that, we were aiming to enhance FDA's ability to evaluate safety issues that aren't easily investigated with the passive surveillance systems that FDA currently has in place. And within this enhancement, we are aiming to expand FDA's access to subgroups and special populations, expand FDA's access to longer-term data, which may ultimately involve linking between databases, and also expanding FDA's access to evaluate adverse events that occur commonly in the general population, things like myocardial infarction and fracture, that don't tend to get reported to FDA through its passive reporting systems. And it's important to recognize that our goal is to augment and not replace the existing safety monitoring systems. So we've refined our vision of what we'd like to achieve over the next 3 years, and that's summarized here on this slide. What we would like to do is to be able to refine safety signals in near real time, and this will require the development of the following capabilities: to be able to rapidly define exposed cohorts of patients, to establish algorithms that can capture and identify our health outcomes of interest, to aim to use sophisticated modular or reusable programs that are capable of running investigations with minimal input from epidemiologists and clinicians, and that require limited or no ad hoc programming. And finally, to develop a framework that helps to guide the methodologic approaches for safety surveillance investigations that do include some confounding adjustment. Signal generation is part of our the goals of what we'd like to develop for the Sentinel Initiative, and we anticipate that some approaches for developing that will be underway in the next 3 years. The Sentinel Initiative is a very collaborative effort, and as you'll hear today, it involves data partners, both private in our mini Sentinel pilot and public in our federal partners collaboration. We have are part of the Observational Medical Outcomes Partnership that brings together the pharmaceutical industry and the Foundation for the NIH and FDA. And the Brookings Institution Cooperative Agreement allows us to address a range of stakeholders that are have interest in active surveillance. Now, the terminology around active surveillance is highly variable, and we I've included this slide here to introduce you to the terminology that we've been using. It's certainly not the only terminology in this area, but for the purposes of needing to try to get people around to understand what we're aiming to do, this is where we have evolved. So we envision that there is a signal generation process at some point. This may involve methods that identify potential associations between medical products and health outcomes of interest that are not pre-specified, but signal generation also can relate to issues coming up as people are reviewing products that are in development programs or medical literature or reports coming in through the passive surveillance systems. The signal refinement step is around a specific exposure outcome pair that's been identified and that we're trying to gain additional evidence about to understand whether there's a real association. And the signal evaluation step is expected to be needed in many cases where a more thorough analysis is needed to follow up findings from a signal refinement assessment. the arrow is pointing over the signal refinement part of this figure, because that's where we have put our initial efforts over these last few years. There's a real concern about the generation of false positive signals, and so by starting in the signal refinement area where we are getting exposure outcome pairs that have emerged based on a variety of the kinds of data sources that I mentioned just a minute ago, we felt like we were on more solid ground as far as signals that had come to people's attention and that needed to be refined. And so that's where our energy has been focused. The Mini Sentinel pilot is one of the main components of the Sentinel initiative, and I'm going to spend some time kind of doing a high-level overview. You'll hear much more detail about it in the next webinar in this series. It was awarded to the Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare Institute in September of 2009 with the goal of developing the scientific operations that would be needed for an active medical product safety surveillance system. The aim was to create a coordinating system, a coordinating center that had continuous access to automated healthcare data systems, and that would provide us a laboratory, if you will, for developing and evaluating the scientific methodologies that might later be used in a fully operational Sentinel system, and also offer us the opportunity to understand what some of the barriers and challenges might be for evaluating in near real time safety issues in existing automated healthcare databases. This figure describes the flow of information in a query. So in the upper left-hand corner, this is at FDA. FDA is prioritizing the safety questions that are emerging and sending a safety question to the coordinating center. The coordinating center writes a program, which is then sent to the data partners. The data partners in this case have, and I'll talk a little bit more about this, but in order for one computer program to run across a variety of data partners, the data partners have transformed their data into a standard format called the Mini Sentinel Common Data Model, and so that the computer program can run on that data. It's done at the data partner site behind their firewalls to ensure the privacy and security of patient data, and only summary results are shared back with the coordinating center. The coordinating center then reviews and aggregates findings and works with FDA, and FDA is interpreting those findings, and ultimately that information is considered along with many other sources of information that the FDA may have about a given safety issue, ultimately shaping what regulatory action might be taken and communicating the findings to inform healthcare decisions. A set of principles and policies have been developed for Mini Sentinel to guide how the work is done. This is public health practice, not research. There is the transfer of any protected health information and proprietary data is minimized between the data partners and the coordinating center. Data partners participate voluntarily, and there is a goal to maximize transparency by posting tools, methods, protocols, and computer programs on the minisentinel.org, as well as findings. I have a slide with minisentinel.org coming up in a few minutes. Now, as I mentioned, the common data model was developed in order for all of the data partners to be able to participate, and it describes populations with administrative and claims data, it has well-defined person time for medically attended events that are known. The data areas include, and there are tables for each of these, enrollment, demographics, outpatient pharmacy dispensing, utilization, including encounters, diagnoses, and procedures, and mortality, including death and cause of death. As of July 7th of this year, the Mini Sentinel distributed database includes quality check data held by 17 partner organizations, and among those 17 partner organizations, there are 99 million individuals, which comprises 316 million person years of observation time. The data partners that are participating have a range of time that they go back to. The longest duration that data goes back is to 2000. This current assessment includes 2000 through 2000, July 2011. There are 39 million individuals that are currently enrolled and accumulating new data, and they're amongst this 99 million individuals, 24 million individuals have over 3 years of data. Now, there are three different ways that the Mini Sentinel distributed database can be queried, and those include pre-tabulated summary tables, reusable modular SAS programs that run against the person-level Mini Sentinel distributed database, and custom SAS programs for in-depth analyses. The summary tables include and summarize utilization information that using predefined concepts. So these are demographics information. These are ICD-9 codes for procedures, ICD-9 codes for diagnoses and procedure codes, as well as the outpatient drug exposure. They are created by, via distributed programs that are written by the coordinating center and sent out to the partners. And the these programs are run, and then the summary tables are held by the data partners. And at the time that a particular question is needed, that question is then sent out to the data partners, and they retrieve this information that has been previously been run and checked. There's rapid access to this information, and no protected information is shared. There are some limitations to these summary tables. There's not linkage across tables, and individuals can't be added across across periods, and no temporal relationships can be drawn based on the summary table information. This just gives a quick idea of the numbers of queries that have been sent out during a period earlier this summer, as well as the response time. And so for the summary table queries, it's been very productive, and there have been a quick turnaround to be able to get the responses back to the FDA. Now, the modular programs are the reusable programs that are adaptable for specific questions, and there's four different modular programs that are currently available, and they're described on this slide. There is drug exposure for a specific period, drug exposure in amongst a group with a specific condition, and then there is modular program three that allows the definition of a cohort of people with a particular exposure, and that exposure can be among people with a pre-existing diagnosis, and then the program allows for looking for a specific outcome in that group of patients who have that exposure. Modular program four focuses on assessing concomitant exposure to multiple drugs. And these are all being used now. The custom programs are developed for protocol-based assessments that are being developed to evaluate specific questions that are coming up. And the users work with the Mini Sentinel Operations Center to develop a custom program that runs across the Mini Sentinel distributed database. And this really goes to looking at specific questions that require additional complexity in the analysis beyond what the modular programs and summary tables are able to do, particularly when there are confounders that need to be controlled for. And as these custom programs are developed, they will be included in the Mini Sentinel programming library so that those project-specific code can be used and adapted for other projects. And the Mini Sentinel Operations Center works closely with the data partners and the FDA to develop and implement these programs. So what I've been talking about for the last few minutes around the mini-sentinel distributed database and the development of the common data model has been led by the data core component of the mini-sentinel project. We also have a methods core and a protocol core. This slide summarizes the activities of the methods core over the last few years and moving forward. As I mentioned, as part of the vision for Sentinel for the next 3 years was a framework for the safety surveillance methods. And so this framework or taxonomy was initiated in year two and continues to develop, and continues to develop into year two so that we can, given a certain characteristics of exposures and certain characteristics of outcomes and certain characteristics of the exposure-outcome relationships, use a flowchart, in a sense, or this taxonomy or framework to help make a decision about methods that are useful for addressing specific types of safety questions that come up. So this taxonomy is in its second year of being developed, and various components of other projects that have been done within the methods core are feeding with lessons learned from those projects into the taxonomy or framework. And I would refer you to the minisentinel.org for the full report of the taxonomy from year one. In year one, we had three methods projects that have been completed. One was about regression methods applicable for sequential surveillance programs. There was a project on case-only methods, including case-based methods like case crossover and self-controlled case series, and as well a third project looking at enhancing methods for application of high dimensionality propensity score confounder adjustment. There are ongoing methods projects now. One of the issues that has come up was do we have methods for evaluating the impact of FDA regulatory actions? And so there's a white paper going on now to assess what methods are useful for conducting those kinds of evaluations. There's another project about evaluating strategies for data sharing and analyses in distributed data settings. And this project is particularly important because of some of the potential limitations in data sharing across a distributed database, recognizing our goals of minimizing any kind of sharing of protected health information between the data partners and the coordinating center. And there's a third project that looks at developing a framework for validating the results of the protocol-based assessments. We've recognized and we've learned a lot from the Vaccine Safety Data Link experience where they've been monitoring the safety of new vaccines for the last several years. And the experience in that program has been that many of the safety signals that emerge are related to other issues that come up in the analysis and may not be actual signals. And so we want to have a framework that we can validate the results of our protocol-based assessments so that we can efficiently get to associations that appear to be true and make sure that there aren't other issues in the data or in the analysis that may have raised a spurious finding. As I mentioned, there's also a protocol core within the mini-sentinel organization, and the protocol core has been is responsible for several kinds of projects around evaluating specific issues. And I mentioned again earlier in our discussion of the Sentinel vision that we want to be able to have confidence in identifying health outcomes of interest in observational databases. And in order to do that, we have to have some validated algorithms for identifying cases that we have confidence in that have a good positive predictive values. So in the first year of Mini Sentinel, there were systematic reviews of the literature for 20 health outcomes of interest to look for which of those have validated algorithms and that we can have some confidence in looking for those health outcomes of interest. And also, you know, equally importantly, to determine which ones have not been very easily identified in observational databases so that we can know what additional validation work needs to be done or which health outcomes of interest just might not be suitable for this kind of work. We also wanted to be able to develop procedures for validating health outcomes of interest algorithms in a distributed database, and so that was a project that was done with Acute MI as the HOI in year one, and there was development and procedures that were developed for obtaining full-text hospital records and then extraction of and redaction of any kind of protected health information and sharing with the coordinating center or the group that was leading that project, and also developing and testing case identification and validation and adjudication process. And so that project was successfully completed for Acute MI. As we are well into year two, we have two additional health outcome of interest algorithms being validated now within the Mini-Sentinel distributed database. Those are severe acute liver injury and anaphylaxis. The third group of projects that the protocol core is assisting and helping to develop are the active surveillance protocol-based assessments that evaluate specific questions that come up that need the more refined and sophisticated analysis. We have several task orders within the Mini-Sentinel project. The one that we lead from the Sentinel core team looks at, helps to create and provide and move forward the Mini-Sentinel distributed database, in addition to overall also adding additional clinical data elements, including laboratory data and vital signs data that are being added in year two, and additional laboratory data will be added in year three. And then we also are helping to continue methods development and the HOI validation, as I mentioned. Additionally, we have our project looking at working on anonymous linking between data partners, and in this case, we're looking at a device registry and claims, one of the claims, one of the data partners of claims data, in order to recognizing that there is information in registries that can be important to help us understand particular safety issues, and device registries are a rich source of information around, you know, particular device safety questions. So, but recognizing the importance of maintaining patient privacy, we're working on these this anonymous linking approach. Within CDER also has a task order within Mini Sentinel, and the goals of that task order are listed here. So there are emerging safety issues with new molecular entities that because new molecular entities are new to the market and experiences accumulating over time, this requires the use of sequential analyses that can accumulate data over time. There may also be some situations where a one-time look is useful, and this can be adapted for either a single outcome or multiple outcome. There are also safety issues that emerge for drugs that have been marketed for more than 2 years, and in this case, it may be that you don't necessarily need sequential analyses because there may be enough experience that has accumulated in the time prior to the safety issue emerging, and so that may be a one-time look. There also within the Mini-Sentinel task order is this component of evaluating the impact of FDA regulatory actions, and in some cases this may look specifically at how drug use changes in relation to a regulatory action, but also may look at, you know, the change in frequency of specific adverse events of concern, in which case there can be comparison of monitoring before and after the action and looking for changes in the occurrence of specific adverse events. There's also a component in the mini Sentinel task order to look at drug use, and because CDER has some drug use databases that it has access to try and understand how the Sentinel initiative, mini Sentinel, or to compare how the mini Sentinel distributed database compares with these proprietary nationally projected databases that CDER has access to. CBER also has a task order within mini Sentinel, and it's referred to as PRISM, primarily because it grew out of the PRISM project, which looked at the safety of the H1N1 vaccine during the pandemic influenza in 2009. The goals of the PRISM task order in this past year have been to help to create an operational framework for looking at specific safety issues that are emerging with a range of vaccines. And in particular, to evaluate two vaccine adverse event pairs, the Gardasil vaccine for HPV and venous thromboembolism, and the rotavirus vaccines and intussusception. Another component of the PRISM task order is to identify and evaluate complementary data sources. This would be the state immunization registries that may provide information, and we need to think about how that information can be linked anonymously. And there's also a goal to develop methods to detect non-pre-specified events. So this is more in the signal generation realm, and also to improve methods for causal inference in sequential analysis. As I mentioned, we have there's a website, minisentinel.org, that summarizes the range of work that's being done within Mini Sentinel, and where you can find much more information about the projects that I've been talking about today. So Mini Sentinel is our pilot that includes private data sources. As I mentioned, we also have a federal partners collaboration that includes federal partners, as is implied in the title. So this is an active surveillance initiative that is conducted via interagency agreement with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the VA Health System, and the Department of Defense. This is, in essence, a small distributed system where and each partner has a unique data infrastructure, so no common data model is being utilized. And so we have the opportunity to see what happens when we're not using a common data model. The general procedure is that FDA proposes a medical product adverse event pair to investigate and really focuses on particular safety questions that are of interest to all the federal partners. We develop a shared protocol together, and then each of the federal partners implements it in its database. And it allows us to assess the interpretability of these query findings because this is a decentralized analytic approach, and there's different patient populations. So given that we have many different types of patients and treatment guidelines in these different federal partners, we can work to understand how those issues, what the implications of the findings are. I also had mentioned earlier our convener on active medical product surveillance with the Brookings Institution, and the website link is here. Brookings helps us to convene expert stakeholder conferences around specific questions that we're grappling with to help us understand how to ultimately stand up the Sentinel system. There are medical product surveillance roundtables, which are one-hour webinars focusing on specific developments in the active surveillance realm. There are active surveillance implementation meetings, which bring together stakeholders interested in active surveillance to help figure out how FDA will ultimately stand up the Sentinel system. And Brookings has also hosted our annual public workshops, the next of which will be in January of 2012. I briefly mentioned OMOP. OMOP is a public-private partnership between the pharmaceutical industry, FDA, and hosted by the Foundation for the NIH to inform the appropriate use of observational healthcare databases for active surveillance. There's been a primary focus on methodologic research to empirically evaluate the performance of methods and their ability to identify true drug safety issues. There's been a focus on developing open source tools and capabilities for transforming, characterizing, and analyzing disparate data sources. And there has been a goal of establishing a shared resource to move this whole area of safety science forward. The third webinar in this series will have an opportunity to talk more about the Brookings collaboration, OMOP, and the federal partners collaboration. So you'll hear more about those then. As you have probably gotten a sense, this is a long-term complex initiative. We're implementing it in stages as scientific methodologies and the data infrastructure evolves. We are ensuring the maintenance of privacy and security within the distributed system, and this continues to be the highest priority for moving this program forward, and also continuing to address the concerns of stakeholders, patients, and the public. We're ultimately trying to address how the eventual Sentinel system can function in some sense as a national resource and complement other HHS initiatives that are using distributed systems for comparative effectiveness and quality assurance. And this next slide depicts a potential model that Dr. Janet Woodcock has proposed and that we have been working to flesh out, in a sense, to think about how what we have done to date can ultimately be used as a national resource. And so in the center of the ring, in a sense, is this data infrastructure. And we can see in the upper left-hand corner the medical product safety. This is what we've been doing in Sentinel and what we have been working towards developing this data to address the needs of FDA in the realm of medical product safety. But one could envision that this data infrastructure could be used for those interested in doing biomedical research or comparative effectiveness research, public health surveillance, or quality of care work. And so, the goal ultimately is to determine how this distributed network governance happens and then how we can make this resource available more broadly than just for FDA needs. I'm going to stop there, and I'm happy to take questions.
Judy, thanks very much. Hi, it's Josh Benner at Brookings, and I want to thank you for that very nice presentation. We have a couple of questions that have come in over the course of the discussion so far, and so I'm going to ask those individuals to unmute their phones and ask them in a moment. In the meantime, if there are other folks who have questions you'd like to ask and you are on the webinar, please use the Q&A tab to send us your questions so that we can call on you in turn. And then at the end, if we still have time, we'll go to folks who are on the phone only and ask anyone to unmute and ask their questions if they would like. So let me first ask Patrick Miller to ask the question that you sent, Patrick. There's a clarification about the participation of data partners in those July queries.
Sure. Thank you. The question was just on slide 16 in terms of how many partners returned responses and just sort of a general sense of who those partners were out of curiosity. Thank you.
Sure. So the data partners that are currently participating within the mini-Sentinel distributed database include several of the Kaiser Permanente sites, several of the HMO Research Network sites, HealthCore, and Humana. There are other data partners that are in the process of joining the mini-Sentinel as collaborators, but the results that you're seeing that are the data that have the data partners that have been that have transformed their data into the common data model and that the data checking has occurred are the ones that I just described.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Judy. Also, there's a related question from Anita Goyal. Anita, do you want to ask your question now? Press star 7 to unmute.
Good morning, and thank you for a very informative presentation. I just wanted to, while we're on the slide, understand from July 11th to the 17th, the why the response time was the longest year in comparison to the other time.
Right. So, you know, there is variability across this because, first of all, this is, you know, in the sense of a pilot, there are still, you know, some of quirks in the system that are being worked out, but it also may relate to other competing priorities. So there are also modular programs that are being run at the same time, and so modular programs aren't shown on this particular slide, but if there is work going on related to other projects that may extend the response time for some of the queries, there's also a big bump in the number requested, and so that might be part of it as well. You know, one of our opportunities here is to understand how to work out, you know, the flow of queries and information, and, you know, that's part of trying to get a system up and running.
Thanks, Judy. I want to go to Lourdes Frau. Lourdes, are you still with us? Lourdes, if you're still with us, press star 7 to unmute, and you can ask your question.
Can you hear me?
There you are. Yep.
Actually, my question is fairly self-explanatory. Current description of Sentinel points to about 90% signal verification and maybe 10% signal generation. How is Sentinel, how is this different from the current and past signal verification studies and activities that are usually done and have been done for a while within industry? Namely, can you describe your active surveillance components a little bit more? I mean, is this really active surveillance, or is this pretty much signal verification that we have, that industry has been doing for years at a larger scale?
So I described the, you know, processes of signal generation, signal refinement, and signal evaluation. And as I mentioned, our initial efforts have been in the signal refinement area. So that is to gain additional information about particular questions, safety signals that have emerged from a variety of data sources. Signal generation is a component of what has been included in the work in the Sentinel Initiative, but our energies have not been as focused in that area. But that is part of what we are planning on doing. So although we have not done a lot of work in that area, there is some work in that area in within the CBER, the PRISM task order that I mentioned, and there is intended to be in this three-year vision, additional development of approaches for signal generation for non-specified outcomes. But up to now, more of our energies has been focused around signal refinement of safety signals that are emerging in a variety of settings. And, you know, in order to develop a system that can be responsive to the questions that are coming up, you know, that is a need right now is for as safety signals emerge to be able to, you know, respond and gain additional information about those particular questions. So that's where we have been focused initially, but our efforts will expand to include more work in the signal generation area.
Oh, but wasn't Sentinel initially supposed to be a surveillance initiative, not really a signal verification initiative?
So signal verification is not the word that we would use. Signal verification, I think, implies to some extent that, you know, you already know something and you're just confirming what you know. But I think I would agree that the goal of the Section 905 describes the development of a risk identification and analysis effort. And as I mentioned, we are developing the capabilities for risk identification, and those are in progress.
Thanks very much. We're going to go to William Cazido. William, if you're with us, can you press star 7 and ask your question?
Hello.
Hello. Go ahead.
Yes. I just had a question concerning it was a slide showing the link between data partners and the FDA with the coordinating centers, how they work. But on that flow diagram, I did not see a direct link with the observational medical outcomes partnership. Does the coordinating center work directly with this observational outcomes partnership group, since they are concerned with the development of methods to, you know, do they work directly?
So the OMOP, the Observational Medical Outcomes Partnership, has primarily been focused on methods development. And these are two projects that, you know, Mini-Sentinel and OMOP that the FDA is highly involved with. And the goal is that the methods development work that is conducted within OMOP will help to inform the methods that are used within Mini-Sentinel to evaluate safety issues. And so the two groups are not, I'd say, you know, formally connected, but there is, we are working to ensure that lessons learned through OMOP research are further implemented in the Mini-Sentinel pilot.
Thanks, Judy. I'm going to ask a question that sort of summarizes a couple of questions we've received, which basically deals with how FDA plans to use this new capability going forward. And so are you able to say anything about perhaps the number of molecules FDA might be able to evaluate using this new capability in the next few years, or how it is FDA will determine which products to apply this surveillance capability to?
So each of the medical product centers, so that's CDER, CBER, and CDRH, have groups within them that are, you know, focused on working with Sentinel. And each of the centers are developing procedures within their centers for prioritizing questions for evaluation within the Sentinel Initiative projects, either Mini-Sentinel or the Federal Partners Collaboration. I don't know that I can give a specific number to the kinds of evaluations and assessments that will be conducted, but that querying capability of the modular programs and the summary table queries, that went live late spring, and we've had over 100 summary table queries and about 15 modular programs run in that time since they went live. And so the capabilities of responding to at least providing some information around specific questions, that's clearly becoming a very, we agency is using it and learning a lot from it and coming to understand what the capabilities of what the modular programs are and coming to understand what refinements might be needed to make those modular programs even more helpful. The protocol-based assessments are somewhat bigger projects that involve work groups that are developed between Mini-Sentinel and the medical product centers. Excuse me. And so those protocols right now are still taking a fair bit of time to develop as well as the protocols developed within the Federal Partners Collaboration. So I think we're gaining experience, and with the development of that experience, we can envision being able to ramp up in a sense, because as we develop the various components of these, we can reuse them for subsequent questions that come up and adapt them and not have to start from scratch.
So we had a question along those lines from Kathy Kelly. Kathy, are you with us, and can you press star 7 and go ahead?
I just wondered when we could expect a report on the Mini-Sentinel evaluation of the association between oral hypoglycemic drugs and MI.
Right. So that's a project that is a sequential analysis of accumulating data, and the goal is for that to look at 10 quarters of data, and it's well underway, but we are not we are a couple of one or two looks into that 10. So I don't envision that being that those results being available for quite some time.
For those of you who might not have heard the question, it dealt with when the results of the oral antihyperglycemics and MI study would be available. Let's move to Dan O'Leary. Dan, you had a question about devices?
Yes. I'm interested in all of the techniques, but I'm curious about any applications that might be going on in devices. Drugs and biologics seem to be the focus. The techniques seem to be applicable in devices, and so I'm curious to know what, if any, effort has been expended to understand the same issues with devices.
Right. So, you know, one of the limitations with devices is that there are no unique device identifiers. So to the extent that, or at least not in observational databases. And so to the extent that one could study, you know, a class of devices that can be identified using a CPT code or an ICD-9 code or a HCPCS code, you know, that is possible. But if one wanted to compare, you know, a specific device in a class versus another one, you know, there's substantial limitations. And so that's where our project on the anonymous linking comes in. And that's the project that we have with an orthopedic device registry at Cornell Weill Medical Center, and then with one of our, you know, linking with one of our data partners, claims data. And, you know, so that the specific device information that's captured within the registry could identify patients that have, you know, that are exposed to a specific device, and then a link to those patients who are covered within one of the data partners to look for specific outcomes of interest. So that's a project that's currently underway, because the, you know, some of this anonymous linking is, I mean, work in this area has been done, but we haven't tried to do it in this particular realm.
Okay, thank you.
Lynn, there was a question you had about the size of the project and the gaps that might be left over for other kinds of research. If you're with us, can you go ahead and ask your question?
Yes. My name is Lin Zhang. I have a question. Given the Mini Sentinel has a huge sample size from actually major databases, and with this sophisticated statistical method, for a specific either a signal or known risk, if FDA already did the analysis in MiniSentinel, from your perspective, is there a value for conducting a pharmacoepi study outside the MiniSentinel? And if yes, what is your recommendation in terms of designing and conducting such a study? Should we, for example, follow the MiniSentinel method or using a similar database?
Josh, were you saying something as well?
I was going to encourage you in responding that to also address sort of how FDA's other tools for tracking safety fit together with MiniSentinel and the Sentinel initiative more broadly.
So, you know, the goal, when I talked about sort of that flow of active surveillance between signal generation, signal refinement, and signal evaluation, you know, within MiniSentinel and the Sentinel Initiative more broadly, we're primarily focused on signal refinement and some work in the area of signal generation. The signal evaluation component is currently not within the scope of what we're doing within the Sentinel Initiative. That's not to say that it won't be at some point, because, you know, it's a little bit, this is a pilot that is evolving. So, you know, for the time being, as information becomes available, you know, from mini sentinel assessments, you know, there are certainly settings where a full pharmacoepi type of study may be needed to more fully address the issue or delve into components, you know, getting confounder information and whatnot that, you know, wasn't easily accessible from the mini sentinel distributed database. So I think there are certainly potential settings where, you know, full pharmacoepi studies may be needed. This is not in, or at least as it currently stands, it's not intended to, or we have not set it up at this point to do that kind of, those kinds of full studies.
Thanks, Judy. Natalie, if you're with us, can you please go ahead with your question, Natalie Zaidman? Press star 7 to unmute. Since I'm not hearing Natalie, oh, there she is. Okay, go ahead.
Sorry about that. I pressed the wrong button. My question is, you had mentioned collaboration with industry as part of the Observational Medical Outcomes Partnership, and I wanted to understand if there are any other areas particularly related directly to the Sentinel Initiative or Mini-Sentinel in which there has been collaboration with or with, in which you expect to collaborate with industry partners.
You know, that's been an area that we've been talking about with Brookings and had some discussions with stakeholders to get a better sense of how that might occur. We do not have any specific approaches planned at this point, but it's you know, we recognize that our industry colleagues have a lot of expertise about the products that they've, you know, developed, and, you know, we're in the process of trying to come to understand how to collaborate in that regard.
Thanks, Judy. One last question. Back to Anita Goyle. You had a good question about the various potential applications of this information. Can you go ahead, Anita?
Sure. So my question was just to understand what is the FDA going to be using this data for? So what would be the outcome? Could it result in a label update, for example, or such for additional clinical studies?
Right. So,
Judy, if you could repeat that question so everyone heard it, that would be helpful.
I think the question is getting at how is the information from these evaluations going to be used? Is that? Okay. So, you know, we have a number of sources of information about, you know, specific safety issues that come up. And so the information coming out of Sentinel assessment is used along with those other sources of information to help understand how best to move forward. So, you know, that could be a range of activities, including additional studies, or, you know, in some cases there may be information that, you know, reassures the FDA that there doesn't seem to be a specific problem and that standard pharmacovigilance would be continued. So there, you know, we could imagine that additional study, continuation of standard pharmacovigilance, or, you know, possibly in some cases where there's a particularly strong evidence, there might be, might contribute to, along with other information that's known, to taking some regulatory action.
This is Mark McClellan again. I'd like to thank Josh for moderating those questions and the lively discussion. A lot of good follow-on topics came up as a result of that. I'd like to thank all of you for your contributions as well. And I'd especially like to thank Judy for speaking today and for all of her hard work on Sentinel since basically the program started. As you all heard today, a lot of progress has been made. There is a lot of potential for the future, and Judy's leadership has been pivotal in essentially all of that progress. For those of you who don't know, Judy is going to be transitioning away from the Sentinel team next week. She's been promoted in recognition of those leadership abilities to Deputy Director for Safety in the Division of Anesthesia and Analgesia Products at the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research. And this is, I think, a direct reflection of her abilities in bringing together large and complex projects on very sensitive and important issues, and I'm sure she's going to make a tremendous difference in her new leadership role. So, Judy, I would like to thank you very much for your contributions on Sentinel and on the improvement of the nation's public health more generally, and we certainly look forward to hearing about your further accomplishments in the new position at CDER. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Just a
final thanks to all of you who tuned in this time. Remember, this is webinar one in the set of three overviews and catch-ups related to Sentinel-related activities. The next one will be on Thursday, September 15th from 4 to 5 Eastern Time, and we'll provide an overview of the mini-Sentinel pilot, which Judy discussed to some extent today. The presentations from today's webinar are going to be posted on the Brookings website within the next few days, so keep an eye out for those, and we look forward to having an opportunity to work with all of you again at the next webinar. Thank you very much.